All right. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study, Numerical Modeling, and Climate Change webinar. My name is Carla Roberts. I'm with the Baltimore District U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and I will be your facilitator for today's webinar. Today you will hear from several presenters from a few of our engineering and climate change experts. So I would like to introduce our presenters for today's webinar. They are Lynn Bokamazu, a senior coastal engineer with the New York District Army Corps of Engineers, Jason Engel, the chief of the coastal design section at Jacksonville District with, again, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and he is also the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study climate change lead. We have with us Dr. Chris Massey, a research mathematician with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Engineer Research and Development Center, otherwise known as ERDC, the Coastal and Hydraulics Lab. We also have with us Norberto Nadal, a research hydraulic engineer, also with ERDC Coastal and Hydraulics Lab. So with that, I will go ahead and pass it over to Ms. Lynn Bokamazu, who will be the first presenter of today's webinar. Lynn?
Thank you, Carla. Today we are presenting various aspects of our work for numerical modeling and climate change. I'd like to note that we have just started some of the work on the numerical modeling. It is going to be a long process. I'll explain that in a bit. And some of the information that we're presenting on climate change, it's the beginning of our work on climate change and how we're incorporating that into the comprehensive study. Next slide, please. So a little background. I think most of you are familiar with the comprehensive study, and that's why you received invitations to this webinar. But again, Hurricane Sandy impacted the Atlantic coast in October of 2012. It did affect the entire coast from Florida to Maine, but the greatest areas of impact were New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And Public Law 113-12 was passed on January 29, 2013, and it allowed us to start this comprehensive study. Next slide. So the comprehensive study was included in that public law, and there was a bill language that stated using up to $20 million of the funds, we shall conduct a comprehensive study to address flood risks to the vulnerable populations in areas that were affected by Hurricane Sandy. The comprehensive study must be completed by January of 2015, and unused funds would be available for other UC studies. The areas affected by erosion, precipitation, storm surge, and winds were identified as the study area. The picture in this slide shows the areas that were affected, color-coded by the FEMA Hurricane Sandy storm surge data, including areas that had low impacts all the way to areas that had very high impacts in purple. The NAD district boundaries are located in the black lines, as you can see, from Maine through Virginia. The goals of the comprehensive study are to provide a risk reduction framework consistent with the USAIS and NOAA rebuilding principles. We are trying to promote a coastal resilient communities with sustainable and robust coastal landscape systems, consider future sea level rise and climate change scenarios, reduce risk to vulnerable populations, property, ecosystem, and infrastructure. Next slide. So early in the process, after January of 2013, when the bill was passed, we did some scoping for the comprehensive study, and we came up with these activities that are listed on the right-hand side of the slide. And it's regarding a coastal framework. We must be regional in scale, have interagency collaboration. There are different opportunities by region and states, and we are looking at those specific opportunities by reaching out to our state partners. We will identify a range of potential solutions and develop parametric costs by region and state, and identify areas for additional analysis. I did want to pick out two of those items, and those are the two that we are going to discuss this afternoon. In the blue boxes at the top of the the picture. One says climate change and sea level rise, 50 and 100 year scenarios, working with NOAA and USAIS. That information, that work is going on under the future mean sea level and other climate changes activities under the COMP study, and Jason will discuss that, and Norberto will also discuss that. And then there's a box that says updated regional frequency analyses. Basically, our storm surge work, and we developed a scope of work titled Computing the Joint Probability of Hurricane Sandy and Historical Coastal Storm Forces, forcing parameters from Maine to Virginia. Next slide. So our study needs, and that was the title of this short presentation, we needed to be comprehensive, regional scale from Maine through Virginia, and we needed to use the current science and engineering that's incorporated into our core guidance. So with that, we again developed the scope of work to do storm surge modeling from Maine through Virginia. Next slide. And that's one of the key technical components within our this comprehensive study. We're doing engineering, sea level rise, nature-based and green engineering. We're looking at environmental and cultural issues and how they can lead us to some suggestions for risk reduction. The economics behind those solutions, plan formulation, and doing a coastal GIS analysis. So bringing out this again, this is conversation is mostly about today, it's mostly about engineering, parts of the engineering components, and sea level rise and climate change. Next slide. Just a little bit about the schedule. The top green boxes show, kind of very blockish schedules. We are still within phase one. We're doing our assessment and formulation of measures. We're working on that right now. We have started doing the numerical modeling work. We have started doing the sea level rise work, but we're just in phase one. In the spring of 2014, we'll have more opportunities for input from our stakeholders and the public, but that's the spring of 2014. Just wanted you to look at the middle of the slide, which said the deliverables in 2015 would be all the deliverables of the study, including the storm sweep modeling, which will incorporate sea level rise and climate change. Next slide. Thank you. So go back to engineering. Again, I mentioned that we're doing multiple things about engineering, looking at historical data and existing conditions, looking at some design criteria. We did a performance evaluation study. But the topic that we're talking about right now is this refining the regional storm sweeps and storm surge and wave forces within our project area from Maine through Virginia. Next slide. And also now we're doing our sea level rise and climate change scenarios work. We have to use both our ER 1165-2-212 and NOAA's global sea level rise scenarios for the U.S. National Climate Assessment. So using both of those, we use that information to assess risk and consequences of both sea level rise and climate change, and we will evaluate sea level rise scenarios for the 50 and 100 year intervals. And at that this point, this is how we. I'm going to just segue right into Jason Engel, who will give some description of some of the work that we've done to date on this sea level change work for the comprehensive study. Jason?
Thank you, Lynn, and good afternoon, everyone. Wanted to elaborate a little bit more on the sea level change scenarios that we're evaluating for the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study. Next slide, please. A little bit of background. The IPCC panel, the IPCC panel predicts continued or accelerated global warming, and which will cause continued or accelerated rise in global mean sea level. the climate-driven global mean sea level change scenarios have been developed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, as Lynn mentioned, in the EC 1165-2-212, and also by NOAA in their document published in 2012. These scenarios are being used to evaluate future impacts of sea level change on the natural environment and the human infrastructure. When we say this, this includes the effects of sea level rise on its own and also in combination with extreme water levels due to storm surge, freshwater inflow, etc. Finally, the application of these scenarios for the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study is what I'm here to talk about today. At the bottom, you see the two references. These are the titles of the guidance from U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and NOAA on these scenarios. So anyone that wants to know more about the can reference those documents. This slide illustrates the sea level change scenarios, a plot of them for, in this case, New Jersey. The lower three, the green, yellow, and orange, represent the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' low, intermediate, and high, and the red represents NOAA's highest. These are the four scenarios being included in this comprehensive. So a little bit of a discussion about global versus local sea level change. During the 20th century, the global mean sea level has risen by 1.7 millimeters per year on average from IPCC 2007 publication. The local relative sea level change is influenced by decadal scale climate and oceanographic patterns, and those patterns may influence sea level on a temporary basis, but those fluctuations are not associated with long-term sea level change patterns. The relative sea level change relies on long-term water level records greater than 30 or 40 years, ideally, to remove non-global mean sea level variations due to those climate and oceanographic patterns. And what remains is the global plus the local or regional land uplift and subsidence. So generation of site-specific future sea level change, the regional sea level change is the sum of the global and the regional land subsidence and uplift. The relative sea level change is required to assess the sea level change impacts at specific sites, because clearly we want to know what the sea level change is relative to the location in question. And if the land is subsiding at a higher rate, then the sea levels will be rising in relationship to fixed infrastructure at a higher rate. This regional sea level change has been measured directly by NOAA long-term water level gauges. Because these are fixed to the ground, they are in fact subsiding with the ground, and so they are measuring this combined global and guidance. There are 35 NOAA water level gauges between Virginia and Maine where we have evaluated sea level change for the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study.
Hey, Jason, this is Eddie. I'm sorry to interrupt your presentation. Can I ask you to just speak a little bit louder or maybe get a little bit closer to your microphone? That would be terrific.
Yes. Does that help?
That helps a lot. Thank you very much.
Okay. This is an example of future sea levels for four selected locations out of the 35. These happen to be in New York. These are referenced to the North Atlantic vertical datum of 1988 in feet. And on the left, you can see the year. 2018 is the first year that we would expect construction. It is our base year for this analysis. 2068 is 50 years in the future. 2100 is a year that's often cited in different climate change literature. It's a year that many of the scenarios that are developed worldwide tend to use that year, so we wanted to include it. And then 2118 is 100 years from the base year. You can see that each of the columns represents one of the four scenarios. From left to right, it's the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers low, which is the historical rate, intermediate, then high, and then the NOAA highest. And as I said, since these are referenced to vertical datum,
at that location. So this is useful for assessing sea level change in each individual location, and this includes subsidence and uplift. Next slide. I wanted to show an example of how this information was being used in the comprehensive study. This map represents the effect of sea level change 50 years from present time, that is in the year 2068, from 50 years from the base year, that is, for Jersey City, New Jersey. In the upper right, you can see the same figure with the four sea level change scenarios, and we're at year 2068. These are the values in yellow that represent the elevation at that time in the North Atlantic vertical datum of 1988, 1.23, 1.74, 3.37, and 4.18. The colors on the plot represent the inundation as a result. So the lightest blue or aqua color is the low, USA's low, sea level rise. The medium blue is the USAIS intermediate. The dark blue is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers high. And then the red represents the NOAA highest. Similarly, on the next slide, this is the 100-year sea level rise impacts for Jersey City. So after 100 years, same colors apply for the low, intermediate, high, and NOAA highest. And so this is an example of how this information is being used. We are also using sea level change and is being incorporated into the numerical modeling that is being presented later today. That's all I have for the sea level change. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Our next presentation will be from Dr. Chris Massey.
Thank you, Carla. I'm Chris Matz with the Army Corps of Engineers, ERDC, Coastal and Hydraulics Laboratory, and I'm the lead PI on the Coastal Storm Modeling System, which is going to be used in a comprehensive study to do the numerical modeling of all the scenarios to do the statistics part. And so I want to provide an overview today of the modeling system and some of the other capabilities associated with that. Next slide, please. So the SeaStorm modeling system is a system and methodology of applying high fidelity, high accurate numerical models related to coastal storm scenarios. In particular, we have in the modeling system winds and pressure field inputs from a variety of sources we're able to use. We have a coastal circulation and storm surge model that is in there. That's the ADSERC model. We also have both offshore and nearshore wave models, and many of these numerical models are tightly coupled to each other so they can share information back and forth through a coupling system that we generically call the SeaStorm couplers. We've got a little cartoon schematic there in the center of the slide showing the different models and how they interact with each other. And in addition to that, we have a nice graphical user interface that lets us set up and show how these models work together. The methodology itself, using these models and the methodology as outlined, provides for a robust and standardized approach to establishing the risk of coastal communities to future flooding events. And it's not just for hurricanes, it's for nor'easters, normal storms, normal tidal scenarios as well. It's an expandable and upgradable system. We also have the option in there of doing morphological change, so that if we wanted to evaluate dune erosion or barrier island erosion or accretion, we can do that in the study as well with the same models. Next slide, please. So as I was saying in the first one, and this is just to formalize the list, these are the models that are actively a part of the modeling system. We have a PBL, which stands for Planetary Boundary Layer Model, for generating synthetic tropical cyclone events. As one of our wind options, we can also use historical winds from storms like Sandy or Irene or others that we get from outside meteorological experts. We have two wave models that we're using, a deep shore wave model, WAM, it's a global ocean wave model, and then a near shore wave model, ST wave. Circulation, we have both ADCIRC and the adaptive hydrodynamics model, ADH, as options in here. As I said, we do have the option of doing morphological change. That is not in planned as part of this study, but could be used for follow-on studies if we want. The framework itself is the sea storm modeling system framework couplers. We use the surface water modeling system, or SMS, for our graphical user interface, which is used across the Army Corps of Engineers. And for future upgrades, we're looking at overland flow models being brought in to a tightly integrated system for this. This is important for highly urbanized areas like New York City and others when you have these big tropical events that come over and dump a lot of rain. And the impact there as well. Each of these models that I've talked about have been made compliant with something called the Earth System Modeling Framework, ESMF, which is, again, a multi-agency, federal agency and university effort to couple models and make it so that models can be used together and almost into a plug-and-play technology. So we leverage off of the ideas of what they're doing inside of that. I just make a mention of that. Next slide, please. So this slide shows several of the graphical interfaces out of the surface water modeling system. One slide each, one little picture each for each of the models, ADCIRC, ADH, WAM, SQA, Planetary Boundary Layer Model, just to show that we've got a nice consistent interface across there. They're all integrated together. You can see how each model interacts and connects with each other. Timelines as well as geospatial referencing with each other. So a nice system that we have makes it user-friendly and easy to view results as well as to set up and do the runs if need be. Next slide, please. So for this study in particular, on the left-hand side of the slide, in the color contours, this is the extent of the ADCIRC domain as it is right now that we'll be using to do the surge modeling. The color contours themselves, the colors are representing the size of the unstructured elements that ADCIRC uses, the hot colors being the smaller the element sizes. Right now, we're going from about 100 kilometers out in the deep water down to 10 meters in the near shore areas where we want to put the resolution. We use such a large domain in order to capture basin-to-basin scale effects and basin-to-region scale effects that are important with hurricanes and very large nor'easter events that come in that affect such a large regional area. The unstructured meshes allow us to capture this entire domain, to have such a large domain, but not to incur additional computational overhead because of that. Out of those 6.2 million nodes, 99% of them are right along the study area from southern Virginia all the way to Maine. So those deep waters and in the Gulf of Mexico are adding less than 1% to the computational cost there. So I just showed the graphical extent of the modeling domain. On the right-hand side, we have some just point locations of where we're going to be saving high-frequency data, time data, high-frequency and time data. We call them save points. We're doing a uniform distribution at the 10-meter, potentially even the 30-meter contours at about 1,000-meter resolution all along the coast, roughly. And then in addition to that, we've solicited for our partners to give us additional save point locations if you have projects, like Army Corps has projects. And so we've got project-specific save points, as well as any place we have measurement data, as in the NOAA buoys and so forth, so that we can comparisons as well. So we're saving data all up and down the coast at high-frequency save points. We're also saving the global solution files. You have the solution across the entire coast, but that is done at a much less frequent time interval, on the order of 30 minutes apart, whereas the save points may be on the order of 10 minutes to 15 minutes. And with the special save points, you'll have those. We're attempting to collocate those with the surge results as well as with the wave results So if you go and you look at a particular point, you can have both the surge and the wave results, as well as the winds and pressures that were there along the way. Next slide, please. So this is, I want to step through kind of each one of the models that we're going to be using and just kind of give a brief overview of them. In particular for the cyclone models, for generating the synthetic storms that we need in order to do the joint probability method optimal selection, for filling out the frequency curves. We need to be able to perturb many of the features in there, not just the track locations, but the characteristics of the storms themselves, whether that be the central pressures, the radius of maximum winds, the forward speeds, those things. We have the tools built into our interface to automatically generate those perturbations, so that we can move through our studies very quickly. And this is just some of the graphical interfaces that go along with that model that we'll be using. Next slide, please. In a similar way, this is a zoom in a little bit about the WAM model. It is a global ocean wave prediction model. It is a third generation. It's got a time-dependent wave action balance equation. And we use this not only to provide for our offshore waves for the purposes of that itself, but it is used to provide boundary conditions to our nearshore wave model, ST wave, which we'll talk about next. Next slide, please. So as we move into the nearshore, we need a different wave model, a nearshore wave model that can capture better the shallow water effects than our global models can and operate at a smaller scale, and that's what ST wave does. And we've made many improvements to ST Wave over the past few years, including parallelizing it, unifying the features, and bringing the full plane physics up to production level standards. And that's one of the main aspects of it that we're going to be looking at. Next slide, please. EdSurf, which I've talked about as well. Is an unstructured finite element model for doing circulation hydrodynamics, both 2D and 3D simulation capabilities. It's a highly portable code. It has the ability to do forcings from tides, river inputs, winds and pressures, as well as waves, all of which will be important for such a large regional study that we're doing. We'll have most of the major river contributions in when we're doing the studies. For those tidal effects, we will be handling through a combination of statistical approaches and nonlinear adjustments into all the different modeling scenarios for that. Obviously, as part of the ERDC modeling system, we've already used ADCERC and some existing grids that I haven't shown with the when we were doing some preliminary surge modeling of Sandy as it was coming in, and also to answer questions about the effects of tides, the nonlinearity of that, as well as some of the sea level rise scenarios with those. Next slide, please. This is what I talked about, tight two-way coupling. It's important to get the physics right between the models so that you can get the feedback going both ways. And in particular, this is important for the surge and the nearshore wave model. So those two models are tightly coupled. They share information back and forth so you can get the correct wave breaks when you have depth-limited breaking. And you get the wave setup happening into the surge model and the forces there, which can account for a half a foot or more of surge difference. The GUI interface allows you to configure these together, set up the both spatial and the temporal referencing, and the coupler itself handles all the coordinate transformations and all the mappings that go back and forth, and it does it in a highly efficient manner. Over what was done many years ago. Next slide, please. When all the modeling is done, we have all the results, then we also have the option of using what is called the SeaStorm database. Dr. Jeff Melby is the POC for that, and I've got just a few slides, two or three slides, showing some of the interface for that. So the SeaStorm database is a place that we can go and store all of the model inputs and outputs, and those inside of that database with the images and the graphics, and they can be queried in a variety of ways, and the user can pop up and see those save points, see the time parts to those, and it's all through a web interface capability as well. Let's go ahead and move to the next slide just to see another slide of some of the options within the CSTORM database. So this is partially being funded initially by some FEMA to store their results in for their flood map update studies. And so all of our results for the thousands of storms that we will be running will be put into this database, and they'll be available for later reuse by other projects as we move forward. One more slide, please. This is a zoom in showing some of the actual outputs of a storm that was running through the maximum surge at that point. You can see the tracks. So you can turn all these on and off, and the interface has a very nice interface for this. Next slide, please. Another aspect that we're doing to make things streamlined and helpful and to extend the data life and use is using a unified file and metadata standard that will make the database access quicker and easier, particularly having to more metadata with our files will make it more useful for more people. So this is something where our research and recent activities, development activities, are coming into focus and will pay off in this study in particular. We're going to be using what is known as the XDMF, or Extensible Data Model and Format, to do this, to save our data and make it available. Next slide, please. We also have, for those involved in working with the project, the Knowledge Hub, which is is like a Facebook-like page where you can go to and be connected to other members of the study and get information about the models and... I'm being distracted by hand raising in the room. With the Knowledge Hub. Next slide, please. ERTC has access. We have access to two HPC centers. One is located here at ERTC, where we've got a 150,000 processor machine called Garnet that we'll be using. We also have access to the AFRL Spirit, which has about 75,000 processors to be doing our simulations on. We are estimating with the base conditions as well as the two future sea level rise conditions, doing approximately 3,000 different simulations. For the waves as well as the circulation going through. Next slide, please. So in summary, with the modeling system itself, we've got the right models, the high fidelity that have been demonstrated to have high skill for doing these types of scenarios, to provide both the regional view as well as the near project views of with an appropriate accuracy for those that we can have confidences in. We've got a nice system from the modeling aspect of it, but also for the data storage and data query, ways to stay connected to each other And so that was what I wanted to talk about today, so I will pass it along to the next presenter.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Norberto Naval. I'm a research hydraulic engineer here at ERDC CHL, and the focus of this presentation will be phase one of our study on the statistical analysis of extreme storm tides. And for phase one, we are performing this extreme analysis study incorporating sea level changes scenarios. And phase one is actually our low fidelity approach. So this is also seen as an initial assessment leading up to phase two. For the extreme analysis and Monte Carlo simulation done in this study, we are using the StormSim software system that has been in development here at ERDC. For this analysis, we're also using the NOAA verified historical water level measurements. This set of data have gone through extensive QA/QC process, and in the case of some of the monthly maximum data, they have verified and been validated with high water marks. We are using 23 of these NOAA gauges. These gauges have long-term records and have been going through a screening process, and they do not have major or significant reliability issues. We're also considering six different sea level change scenarios, one of these being a stationary case, and the other five are different CORBs or NOAA sea level change scenarios. And one of the goals with this phase one study is to develop a set of benchmark responses that will serve to validate some of the results from phase two. Just to put some things in perspective, phase two will be our main joint probability analysis of tropical and extratropical storms. This will be our high fidelity approach, and it will be mostly based from the statistics on the joint probability method, more specifically the Bayesian quadrature optimal sampling approach. Next slide, please. Phase one is our low fidelity approach. It is worthwhile to discuss some of its limitations. First, it is a response-based statistical analysis, and therefore it is limited to gauge measurements and high water mark in some cases. It also considers only historical occurrences of storms. So there are this implies a limitation in the number of hurricane landfalls and track variations that have affected these areas in particular, and it does not incorporate any insights from storm forcing probabilities, like in the case of a more broad joint probability analysis. Second, this is also related to the first set of limitations, is that in the gauge analysis, we are treating extratropical storms, tropical storms as hurricanes, and hurricanes as just a single population. So in other words, we're dealing with mixed populations, and the historical populations of hurricanes in the area, it's really underrepresented, statistically speaking. And third, as with any analysis based on measurements, there are some other number of issues, including short record lengths, data gaps, and missing storms. Next slide, please. Okay, so I've mentioned the StormSIM software. This is an extremal analysis and an extremal statistical analysis of storm simulation software that has been in development here at ERDIC. In its current state, it is an integrated framework of MATLAB routines, but it has already been used in several studies, including a curve district and FEMA coastal risk analysis, energy applications, coastal planning and engineering, and emergency management. Next slide, please. In terms of some of the storm scene capabilities, it's able to perform joint probability analysis of extratropical and tropical storms. It performs sensoring and pre-processing of historical data, including the HERDAT database information, NOAA water level gauges and buoys, among others. It also performs extremal analysis of extremal analysis including marginal and conditional distributions, Monte Carlo simulation, bootstrapping, time-dependent life cycle analysis, as well as simulation of water levels and wet climate, including the contribution from different sea level change scenarios. Next slide, please. So here we have a table with the 23 NOAA gauges that made the final cut based on the quality of the data. And for example, we have 9 gauges from the coast, from Maine to Connecticut, 6 gauges in the New York, New Jersey area, 8 gauges from Delaware to Virginia. So we have a good representation of these regions. Next slide, please. So here we have the 5 different CORB and NOAA sea level change scenarios that we are using in this study. I think Jason mentioned them earlier, but we have the NOAA highest rate, we have the 3 modified NRC curve, and the historical mean or the linear curve. Next slide, please. In terms of the general methodology, the study is really divided, or is really done as a two-stage process. First, we perform an initial streamer analysis using the historical water levels without considering any future sea level change scenario. For this, we use hourly water level measurements as well as monthly maximum data. And the purpose of this is to fill in some of the gaps that currently exist in the hourly time series. And in this way, we make sure that we don't leave out any of the significant or the most extreme events. And since we are using the data from NOAA, if at any particular location they have verified measurements or high water marks, we are using it and we are incorporating those into our study. So the next step would be to feed the storm tide data using the generalized Pareto distribution method, and we use the maximum likelihood feeding for this. We also perform bootstrapping in order to compute the mean of the distributions as well as confidence limits. The second part of this process is the actual Monte Carlo life cycle simulation, and this is done in a double loop execution. The first loop the inner loop is the actual 100-year life cycle simulation, and here we generate synthetic storm type responses, mainly from three different components, which are the astronomical tide, the storm surge, and the contribution from the different sea level change scenarios. The outer loop is just 1,000 simulations of the inner loop, and this allows us to compute the means of these responses as well as confidence intervals. Next slide, please. Here we have example of the data that we have used for, in this case, is the Battery New York gauge. From left to right, we have first the monthly maximum data that has been used. Then we have the hourly data. And finally, to the right, we have the result from our peaks over threshold analysis. And for this particular case, it can be seen in all three of the plots that the storm of record was the hurricane or / post-tropical storm Sandy. Next slide, please. Here we have the same set of plots, but for the Kings Point New York gauge. In this case, in this location, the storm of record was the 1938 storm, followed by 1954 Hurricane Carol, and the third highest response was produced by a 1992 extratropical storm, and that leaves Sandy with the highest. The fourth highest response at this location. Yeah. Next slide, please. Okay, so here we have some of the results from the first part of the phase one study. And these plots are for the Battery New York gauge. From left to right, we see the storm tide return period that was generated by the GPD model. And on the right, we have the bootstrapping results for the same gauge. The black curve represents the mean of the distribution that was generated in this process. For example, the dash blue curve is the 10% non-exceedance confidence limit. And finally, the dash red curve is the 90% non-exceedance confidence limit. Next slide, please. Here we have the same results, but the same set of results, but for the Kings Point gauge. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so here we have an interesting comparison of the storm tide frequency report. This is comparing some of our results with a study that was done by NOAA. Here you can see this. In this plot, the squares, the green squares are actually the 100-year water levels estimated by NOAA. The purple squares are the 10-year water level. The blue curve represents ERGIC, so that's our study, ERGIC's 100-year water levels, and the red curves are ERGIC's 10-year water levels. So, considering the 10-year return periods The difference for all 23 gauges were actually less than 0.10 meters with a RSMD of 0.04 meters. When it comes to the 100 years water levels, the difference for 21 out of 23 of the gauges were less than a quarter of a meter with a root mean square deviation of just 0.11. The only two exceptions that resulted with larger differences were the Providence, Rhode Island gauge with 0.42 meters and the Washington, D.C. gauge with 0.74 meters. So why these large differences in at these two specific locations? We took a look at the result from NOAA, and since they are using GEV, which is generalized extreme body distribution, for this particular location, I think that they are being overly, their projections are being overly conservative, at least compared to our results. Next slide, please. So the second part of our methodology, which is the Monte Carlo life cycle simulation that incorporates the sea level change scenarios, here the analysis was limited to early, to the use of early data because we needed to decompose the water level signal into the three major components, which are the storm surge, astronomical tide, and the sea level change. So this is actually done by first detrending the measured water level and then subtracting from it the predicted water level. So in other words, subtracting from the measured water level the predicted water level. And what we obtain from these, the residuals, is what we call the storm surge, but there are some other contributions to these values. For the actual Monte Carlo life cycle simulation part, we executed the inner loop by generating the water level by randomly selecting values from the surge distribution and doing superposition of these random surges with random tides, and then adding the time-dependent relative sea level contribution. And Jason explained before how the relative sea level change it is computed. So we did this for five different curves and NOAA sea level change scenarios. And then after we do this inner loop, we perform the outer loop of the simulation. Next slide, please. These are some of the plots that were generated in the process of computing the storm surge responses. On the left, you can see the measured water level, and after it is detrended and the predicted or the water levels or the astronomical tides and are subtracted from it, we are left with the storm residuals or the storm surge, and that's the plot that you see to your right. This example is for the battery New York gauge. Next slide, please. Here you can see the same set of plots, but for the Kings Point gauge. Next slide, please. So these are some of the samples of the generalized Pareto distribution feeds that were done to estimate the return periods of the storm surges and that were used to randomly sample the storm surges for the Monte Carlo simulation approach. Next slide, please. So here we have examples of the empirical CDF that were generated for the astronomical tides and that were used also for the Monte Carlo life cycle simulation. And this is what this CDF were computed using, again, the NOAA water level data. Slide, please. So here we have plots of the final results. These are for the battery New York gauge, and each plot corresponds to a different sea level change scenario. On the first row, from left to right, we have the first scenario is the actual condition or no consideration of sea level change. Then we have the historical rate. And third, we have the modified NRC curve one. On the second row, same from left to right, we have the modified curve two, modified NRC curve two and three. And last, we have the NOAA highest radio rate. Perhaps what's interesting from this is that in this set of results, we can see that as the sea level rises, not only the mean of the distribution rises too, but the confidence limits get wider. So, well, this is indication, as expected, that as the water level increases and as the sea level change scenarios are more drastic, the uncertainty increases too. Next slide, please. So here we have the same set of results, but this time for the Kings Point gauge, and they exhibit more or less the same behavior as the previous gauge. Only difference are in the obviously the magnitude of the water levels. Okay, next slide, please. So the path forward, so now we have to deliver the final draft of the technical report for phase one. And in terms of phase two, we are currently actively working on doing the extratropical storm selection process, as well as we're involved in the generation of the synthetic hurricane storm suite for the North Atlantic coast. So next slide, please. So that's it for my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Norberto and Chris and Jason. This is Lynn Boccamazzo, and I'm going to be doing a little bit of a wrap-up in this last presentation and to just speak briefly about how we're using some of these products and the timeline. My first slide shows two terms, near-term and long-term. So the near-term, we needed to develop some design criteria and methods to evaluate the without project future condition, and also to incorporate some of the sea level rise aspects and climate change in for design and adaptation. For the long term, the information that Chris Massey was talking about, sea storm, and Norberto, the extremal events, we are going to develop those waves and water levels for risk assessment and design for future analysis and studies. Because it is such a large geographic area, it will take us the full time period of the comprehensive study. We don't expect to finish that work until December of 2014. So we have a near term and a long term. And so some of the results out of the modeling study will be used for future activities for the Corps, and we can use that. It will be able to be used by others. So I want to just go through that. And then also we're going to incorporate more sea level rise things and adaptation into the future. Next slide. So one of the things I mentioned was we needed to come up with some design criteria. I happened to be at a ASCE conference on Sandy. It was held at Brooklyn Polytechnic in Brooklyn in April of 2013. And this is my recollection of what people said about their design criteria at different agencies. And as you can see, some people are using the National Hurricane Center's SLOSH model and those elevations, and others were using older FEMA model outputs, 2007 FEMA reports, and then as the new FEMA study was being completed and we had the advisory base flood elevations from the new work that FEMA Region 2 did in the metropolitan area in New Jersey, that was being used by some others. So we needed to come up with some water levels to do our conceptual designs for risk reduction framework for the comprehensive study. So using this information and, you know, discussing amongst ourselves within the comprehensive plan, we had decided to come up with using the best available data. Can you go to the next slide? So the best available data that we could find for right now, because we're trying to come up with these risk reduction measures presently this month, was to use that FEMA water levels. We are going to use some of the other water levels for different applications. I'll describe that in a second. But based on what we had right now, we decided to use that FEMA water level. So we're looking at different measures. If you've been on some of the other conference webinars or have had the opportunity to see other things about the comprehensive study, we're looking at a full range of measures, including nature-based infrastructure, / green infrastructure, non-structural, including flood-proofing buyouts, floodplain management, structural solutions, not hurricane barriers because we consider them a little bit of a higher design elevation. But as you can see, for the different types of measures, we are using a different water level for these conceptual designs. We're not using, it's definitely deterministic. We're not using some of the other standard core, net excess benefit, NED type designs. We're designing to these water levels for the comprehensive study right now. So you can see 25 years for nature-based infrastructure, meaning wetlands or living shorelines, things like that. Non-structural, 100 years plus 3. Structural solutions like dunes and breakwaters, 100-year water level plus 3 feet. And for storm surge barriers, the 1,000-year water level. Next slide. So, but on the modeling products, I just wanted to go back to that, was we are using that information that came out of the work that Jason's doing and Norberto's doing to evaluate future without project conditions. And that was some of the slides that Jason showed to describe locations that would be impacted in the future due to sea level rise and climate change. Second bullet does say that we're using the FEMA best available water level right now for these risk reduction features, the conceptual designs. We're having that 3 foot of height criteria. And the additional work that we do on sea level change and climate change, that will be a little bit more in the future of this study. Hopefully it's incorporated by the April timeframe on how not only, initial design considerations, but how these measures can be adapted over time to take into account sea level rise and climate change. Also, future core projects, when we do have to do our standard Corps of Engineers design analysis for various levels of water levels, not just 100 years, what does a 50-year, what does a 500-year do, and to try to come up with a project that is optimized according to Corps of Engineers standards. Next slide. And the modeling products. So this was an opportunity to create a storm suite for Mantua, Virginia. So the comprehensive plan gave us that opportunity. We may not be able to use it to describe some of the initial conceptual plans for the comp study, but we will be able to use it for future studies. So we're trying to define the coastal storm probability space for the study area for coastal risk assessment and project design for future studies. And as I said, it's for the whole location from Virginia through Maine, and it will be available for others to use. I did notice that there was a question, and when we go through the questions, I can answer more specifically how it could be used by others. I think that's my last slide. And I'm going to throw it back to Carla so she can moderate our question period. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lynn, and thank you to all of our presenters, Jason, Chris, and Norberto. That concludes the presentation portion of this webinar, and now we will enter into our question and answer period. I would like to remind folks, and Eddie, please feel free to supplement with anything I may miss. If you would like to submit a question, you may do so by going to the upper right-hand side in the notes little blurb there. You can submit a question. Make sure when you submit your question, you submit it to presenters. You may also ask a question by raising your hand, which is on the upper left-hand side of the top. Did I miss anything? right then.
Sorry, Carla. We were getting some background noise here from one of the lines in the speaker subconference. For all of our participants, if you would like to ask a question, for those of you who are only dialed in and not able to click on the raise hand button up in the top left of your screen, what you can do is you can dial *1 on your phone, and you will be notified once your line is unmuted, at which point you may proceed to state your question. So again, for all of you, if you would like to ask a question over the phone lines, you may use the raise hand button up at the top left of your screen, or if you're only dialed in, you may dial *1 on your phone, and you will be notified once your line is unmuted. I'll turn it back to you, Carla.
Great. Thank you, Eddie. And one quick just announcement before we do start taking some of these questions we have. I did just want to point out that the presentation and the audio recording will be posted on our study website usually within about a week. So just a heads up to everyone, this will be posted. You will be able to see all of the presentations and, again, like I said, the audio recording as well. So I guess I know it looks like there's been someone with their hand raised for quite some time, Eddie. Do you want to go ahead and take the first hand raise here, and we'll start with that question, and then we'll go into some chat questions?
Actually, Carla, I believe that was a technical difficulty that we were able to sort out, so that hand you can ignore for now, and you can proceed with the text questions.
Okay, great. Thank you, Eddie. So, all right. Our first question, will you be running the models taking into account the pre-Sandy situation and or some of the protection measures currently planned or yet to be recommended, timing of such deliverables, also how can other more local studies get access to sections of the model inputs and outputs? Lynn, others?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, because then I might throw it over to Mary and Chris Massey. The models are being run on post-Sandy topography. So it's not pre-Sandy elevations. It's post-Sandy. It's whatever LIDAR data we could get or what, you know, the best available data post-Sandy that we could get. We are not incorporating the improvements. I'm just going to say, if we put a dune out at Rockaway, that's not being incorporated at this time in the modeling. How can more local studies? That's what we're saying is in the future, the model will be available, and maybe we'll have, you know, you will be able to use the model for specific studies. Again, I'm just going to say for Rockaway. So we'll have the basis to use the model, and then we'd be able to put in any solutions and then have a with project condition compared to the without project condition that we're running right now.
Great. Thank you, Lynn. Does anybody else have anything to add to that? Jason?
This is Mary Salone from ERDC. Also, with these specific projects, if there are specific needs that you have, we would like that information provided to ERDC this fall so that we can add save points or virtual gauges at your project locations so that you will be able to use them in the future.
Great.
And
thanks.
Can I say on that point, every district was asked specifically for project save locations. We did look at some federal projects and hopefully incorporated any local projects. But if, again, you think that we may have missed some save points, get in touch with your local district or we'll figure out a way how you can get in touch with us to give us that information where you would want those save points.
Great. Thank you, Lynn and Mary. I guess we'll go ahead and move on to our next question from the chat. The USGS is in the process of developing higher resolution LIDAR data for the same communities of your study. However, the new LIDAR data will not be available until April 2014 or later. How easy would it be to rerun the models with the new LIDAR data?
I'm going to take that first. As I said, we are running post-Sandy LIDAR, and except for those locations which are going to have improvements between that data, which was taken late November of 2012, and your new LIDAR data, there wouldn't be very many changes. So my assumption is we're not going to rerun it under any other topographic condition.
Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, for the comp study, you know, in the future, it can be, you know, that those changes can be incorporated for other future studies.
Great. Thank you, Lynn. Our next question from the chat, can these models accommodate the addition of sand dunes to the coast? If, for example, we add in some structures like sand dunes or even additional salt marshes to act like barriers or sponges, will it be able to show the difference they might or might not make?
I think this is a similar question. The answer is yes, but it would be on a very site-specific basis, and then the models would be run for those specific project locations. That's the benefit of using an ADSERC model. You can change the topography to include a dune or a wetland feature, and then have the without project and the with project conditions. I'll throw it over to CHL if they want to.
Yeah. This is Mary again. Yes, that's absolutely right. And another benefit of that is you can have a smaller ADSERC mesh for your project location and force it with these save points so you can do these different scenarios on a smaller project scale.
Great. Thank you, Lynn and Mary. All right. We'll move on to the next question. Will the storm modeling and upland water level predictions be able to factor in upland precipitation and upland flooding occurring at the same time?
No, we are not considering precipitation or upland flooding. We are doing surge inundation, but not flood routing or precipitation.
Okay, thank you. Our next. All right, thank you. Our next question: when will we districts get to see the latest version of the model grid and the save point locations?
The grid is done. Save points are in the process of being done. We can send them specifically to John or any other person that's interested for their subdomain. The mesh is very, very large. So we can extract subportions of specific district locations or project locations for anyone who's interested.
Thank you. All right, and another chat question here. Are the MATLAB routines within the StormSim framework available for public use?
This is Roberto. Well, they will be in the near future. Actually, in this FY14, we'll start works on creating a distributable version, the probably time frame of end of the FY14 or beginning of the FY15.
Great. Thank you, Norberto. At this time, we do not have any other questions, so please.
Carla, some people ask me specific questions. Can you not see them?
Nope. I can only – oh. No, if someone sent a question directly to you, I cannot see it.
Yeah, Carla and Lynn, sorry to interrupt for just one second. Some participants may have sent some questions individually to you, so at this point I would like to ask our presenters to take a look at their notes tab up in the top right of your screen, see if there have been any questions that we haven't answered that were sent to all of the presenters and were sent only individually to you.
I have two or three sent to me. This is Lynn. Actually, maybe there's more than that. The first question is from, I won't say who it's from, will the 100-year water levels plus 3 be applied to the Back Bay bulkheads? I'm going to say yes. We're considering them a structural solution, not green or nature-based, so we're going to apply that 100-year water level plus 3 to the Back Bay bulkheads. Second question, it's regarding is sea level rise and climate change as for consequences. It keeps moving on me. Sorry, new to this. is it strictly to physical damages or longer-term environmental or social costs? I don't know why it just continues to do that, and I can't read it. We are considering both environmental and social cost consequences as part of the comprehensive study in our vulnerability assessment. So it's both infrastructure damages and environmental and social costs. What's the basis of the additional 3 feet to the 100-year return period? It's one very quick and dirty consideration of sea level change and climate change. Like I said, quick and dirty, it's a kind of a gross approximation of a 50-year time period of change, and it's what also New York City is using for their you know, the New York City Comprehensive Plan did use that same 100 plus 3.
Great. Thank you, Lynn. Are those all the questions that you have directly to you?
No. Is there an up-to-date 100-year return period data for the states from Virginia to Maine? Yes. We have very good information from Virginia through New York City. We know that the information from FEMA from Connecticut up through Maine is a little bit out of date. So that is what we're using. But, again, using that 3-foot elevation is kind of our buffer, best guess. So we know that some of that information is a little bit out of date in that location. Okay, and I think there's just one more. Chris Massey mentioned developing overland flow as part of the model. This is important for dense urban areas. Will this piece of the model be available for evaluation of projects as part of the comp study, current studies or future studies? What is the timeline? So, Chris, can you answer that one about the overland flow part?
So the overland flow part, we can do that. It is not a part of the study that we are doing at this point. So we do have models that we've run in that area, Geisha and others, that can do that. And it would be applied as a boundary condition to ADCERC, or ADCERC could be applied as a boundary condition to this model to propagate, you know, the floodland waters inland. So right now, it is available, but it's not a part of this study as we've defined it.
Thank you, Chris. Lynn, I have a few questions that I can read now from the main chat, and I would just like to remind participants that if you do wish to submit a question via the chat box, that you send it to all presenters. That would be helpful. Thank you. So I will proceed with the next question. Did I hear that the 30M isobath is where you are saving the data? I may have misheard, but if not, why closer to shore if wave breaking and issue?
So we are actually saving them at both the 10-meter bathy contour and the 30-meter bathy contour along there.
Okay, thank you. Our next question, can your joint probability on storm parameters be discretized to some representative storms can be simulated in a manner consistent with your probability assumption?
Gotcha.
Discredited, I apologize.
Can you repeat that, please?
Yes. I think it means to say, can your joint probability on storm parameters be discredited so some representative storms can be simulated in a manner consistent with your probability assumption?
It reads discretized.
Yes. Maybe we can skip that question, and may I ask that that person please resubmit their question?
That seems clear to me, so yeah, if they can resubmit the question, we'll gladly answer it later.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. Are there opportunities for collaboration with ERDC modeling studies, CSTORM, for regional or site-specific studies? I think we've kind of hit on this a little bit, but any other comments?
I'm just going to say again, the regional site-specific studies would come out as future studies out of the comprehensive report. that we are to identify areas for additional future studies out of the comprehensive report as it is written right now? So the answer is yes, but later, after January of 2015.
Thank you, Lynn. Our next question, it would be very helpful if there were some save points in Delaware Bay, not just the ocean coast.
I'll take that. This is Mary. The Philadelphia District, in fact, asked for save points or virtual gauges all the way up through Delaware Bay, up the Delaware River at a specific spacing. And so that's been incorporated into our save point set already.
Thank you. Another question here. It's a follow-up to the precipitation question. Is it likely that upland precipitation occurring at the same time as a coastal storm has a significant effect on the upland water levels?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
I had another question, and I think they just answered it. Much of the flooding that occurred during Sandy and Delaware Inland Bays areas was a combination of heavy rain plus surge. Therefore, should the Corps reconsider the answer given a little earlier pertaining to the modeling? I'm just going to say it's beyond the scope of the study because the region was so large. That's why we developed the scope. We wanted really to get up into Maine through Connecticut because we didn't have an ADCERC model. Was mentioned before, we are taking advantage of information that's been done from FEMA Region 2 and Region 3. So we had a short time period and we had a very large location, so probably there are things that we had to not do just because of those constraints.
This is Jason. I would also say that rainfall could be incorporated in the regional or local studies that would follow on after the comp study.
Great. Thank you, Lynn and Jason. We have another question from the chat. When will your probabilistic input models be available for sharing so other studies can make similar assumptions?
Yeah, probably we'll be doing that at the end of the study around the time frame of January of 2015.
Great, thank you. I do not have any other questions in my notes box. Do any of our other presenters have any questions that have been sent directly to them to make sure we don't miss anything? I just received one more question. How can I tell whether save points I am interested in are included? I have not seen the full map of save points. I am especially interested in the Maryland, Virginia, Atlantic coast.
If you have specific interests, if you could send them to ERDC, we will make sure that they're incorporated. Or in reverse, we can send you a list of what we have saved, lat longs, and you can map them yourself. Either way will work for us.
Hey, Carl, is there any way that we can post some of that? Did you guys want to post that on the website, CHL, so everybody could see it? Is that something that we could do?
We can.
Mary, Chris, are you okay with that?
Or if there's a point of contact that we can direct folks to, like a specific person at ERDC or maybe Lynn yourself, if they're interested in that information, at least in the interim.
Right. That would be fine if someone, I don't know how you would find, if someone would want to submit a question to me and I could forward it on to CHL and then we could get you the information of your saved points in your location. It's Lynn, lynn.m.docamazo@usace.army.mil, M-I-L.
Thank you, Lynn. All right. Don't have any other questions at this time. I'll ask again our presenters if they have any other questions.
This is Mary Salone. We don't have a question, but we were just discussing these save points, and we could post the entire set at the project website as an Excel spreadsheet if that would be more efficient.
Great, thank you. We have another question that just came in on the chat box. On slide 19, the Sandy event is way out of the confidence intervals at present conditions, sea level rise, static. Any comments why? And unfortunately, I'm not sure which specific slide.
I think it's Norberto was the only one who had 19 slides. So.
Okay.
Yes, the position of Sandy, or the response of Sandy in that plot is strictly due to the record length. So, hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And I guess at this time, I would just like to invite folks, if you do have questions, we have a little bit more time, please submit them in the chat box or the notes box on the upper right-hand side to the presenters, or you may raise your hand to ask your question over the phone on the upper right-hand side of your screen, or you may dial star 1 to be placed in the queue. All right, well, hearing and seeing none, I guess we can go ahead and conclude the webinar. As I said, I do want to reiterate that the presentations and the audio recording will be posted on our study website probably within a week. So we would like to thank you for your participation in today's webinar, and thank you for all of the great questions, comments. We really appreciate like I said, your participation, and also thank you to all of our wonderful presenters. Lynn, do you have any final remarks or anything? Or
no, thanks, Carla, for facilitating, and thanks, everyone, for your attention during this presentation.
All right. Thanks, all. Have a great afternoon, evening.
Okay, thank you.